So good morning. It's July 28th, 2020. I have a special guest. She's Empowering Young Minds. She does photography and is truly an amazing woman. Hi, Erin. How are you?
Oh, thank you. That was such a nice introduction.
Well, when I wrote it, I was like, oh, what can I think of like Erin? I was like, okay, she's a teacher. She has a photography page. So I'm sure she wants that to grow. And I think just meeting you this past month, I truly do think that you're an amazing person.
Oh, thank you. That really means a lot.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. With everything going on, I think you know, you just take things day by day.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think when we were, you know, going through our, you know, Zoom call, I wanted to know more like how is your like teaching experience and things like that. And I think the first question I do want to ask you is what motivated you to be a teacher?
Well, both of my parents were teachers and I had my first job when I was about 15 years old, and that was tutoring people. Mm-hmm. So yes, I kind of always knew that that was something that I wanted to do.
Yeah, I think like, well, I was like a teacher for a bit. I taught in India for 2 months, and then when I came back to the States, I was teaching little kids, and it's a lot harder than I thought it was, because you really have to have like good classroom control. And there's just so many different personalities. Some, you know, some kids, they're just gonna act out, and there's some kids that are quiet. So you just have to make sure that I think you're engaging, but also firm at the same time.
Which grades did you teach?
So when I was in India, I kind of like taught from sixth grade to like college.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and then when I got back to the States, I got offered a job to teach like third graders theater, but I hated it. It was like, I was like, I'm never teaching that young class again. I was like, these kids are too, I don't know, I feel like teaching young kids like that is not for me.
I agree. I also had my own experiences with younger kids, and I was like, nope, high school all the way.
So what level are you teaching right now?
I teach grade 8, 9, and 10.
Okay, so it's a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, I commend those who teach like little kids, because that's very difficult.
It is. Oh my soul, I don't even know how they do it.
I don't know, because I was only doing it for like 2 hours like a week, and then there's people, they do it every single day, all day. I don't know how they do it. I would have like a headache.
It takes real patience.
Yeah, you need a lot of patience to teach like 20 kids or even more. So I commend them. And I think what the next question is, what do you specifically teach?
I teach English to learners whose first language is not actually English. Mm-hmm. So they speak Afrikaans, which is a language here in South Africa.
Mm-hmm. So what do you like love about it?
I love it because I get to connect with, like I said, the older kids and help them with their own personal issues. So if they are struggling, especially with drugs and mental health and stuff like that, then I love being there to provide extra support for them.
Yeah, I think not only I think teachers have to educate, but I think we do at times have to go out of our way and see, like, you know, if there's a kid really struggling, like how can we help them be better? Because I think every kid, and even like each person, they learn differently. Like there's some people, they can't sit in the classroom. Some people are independent learners, or they like one-on-one teaching. I think everyone is different in that sense. So I think that's a good thing that you're going out of your way and you're giving them that extra support.
Exactly. It's about more than just what we deliver as in content. It's about what we can deliver as human beings as well.
But what are different teaching styles that you do to be more creative in the classroom?
Yeah, because my school is completely funded by the government, we as teachers have to be extremely creative, and there's not a lot of resources. We don't have textbooks, we don't have technology. All we have is a desk and a chalkboard. So most of the time we are buying our own supplies, and for me personally, what I like doing is having the learners interact with each other.
And like what do you, do you put them in like groups, or like do you like get out and like have them participate in front of the class?
I feel like group work is the best way to because like I said, I teach English to learners whose first language is not English. So the best way to learn a language is to speak the language. That's why I feel like them interacting with each other is important for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think like having like, you know, different groups and then just them like speaking to each other and like, you know, being with their friends. And I think it could help a lot for the person, because you really have to, you know, I think engage in that way and really learn the language. I know when I was like learning different languages in school, they would make me do like a skit or something in that language, and like they would, I would have to do it in front of the classroom, and I hated it, but I was like, but it made me like learn that way too. So, but I know there's some students, they hate public speaking.
I feel like all students hate public speaking. Like deep down, you don't want to go and stand in front of everybody and speak.
Oh yeah, I used to hate public speaking. Now I can like publicly speak, and I'm doing my like group work, like my part-time job. So I, you know, I do like teaching sessions with them. It's like maybe like a group of 10, which is not a lot. But I definitely like, you know, it's kind of like you have to learn through the years and then you finally get good at it. But when you're younger, you, I feel like most people hate it. So moving on to the next question is, how did your parents influence you?
Both of my parents were that kind of naturally, and my mom, though, she was like the biggest influence that I had. She showed me how important it is to be a support system for the youth, and not just educationally, but in general with life as well. And everyone knows that the heart minds of young people are very important to my mom. So that was a big influence in my life.
Yeah. How did your mom motivate you?
She's the strongest person I know. She grew up in very unfortunate circumstances and always made sure that we would never have to go through what she went through. And I'm very grateful to her for that. She was also very vocal about apartheid and her views on race. And she is and always has been on the side of justice. When she was a teacher, she distributed a magazine that was illegal because it went against the apartheid system. And because of that, she was taken in for questioning by the police, but she never gave in to their questioning. And they used quite violent methods whenever they questioned someone that was of color.
I think whoever's listening, I think they're not aware of like the injustices that happen in South Africa. And then people who are listening to this, they're like, what? This is happening? And it's like, yeah, like, you know, the apartheid and things like that. It definitely was like a, you know, a time where it was divided. And I think it is still divided because of like the corruption of the government and what it put, what they put out in the media.
Mm.
And
that's very true.
Yeah. And what can you give maybe anyone who's listening, like the injustices that are happening currently in South Africa?
Black people are calling colored people children of rape because they are mixed.
Mm-hmm.
This back and forth argument is quite exhausting because we should stand united against what truly plagues this country, and that is the injustices faced by women and children.
Yeah. And I think just like hearing that is just very sad. And it's just like a very corrupt system, and just what media puts out there and then what's passed down to our families, and you know, having these like negative thoughts and negative portrayal of like certain like groups can be very like, you know, discouraging. And but I think it's just, you know, those times where I think now is that we do change, and whoever has this type of mindset, I think, you know, we have to like educate them the best way we can, because nobody's really born racist. And I think, you know, we have to educate others and really make them understand and see things from like a different perspective.
And I agree with you, because for me, being mixed, being colored in this country is a difficult thing to identify with for me, because you don't truly know which side of the spectrum you should be on. Mm-hmm. Should you be on the white side of the spectrum, or should you be on the black side?
Mm-hmm.
But in truth and in reality, none of that should matter. Mm-hmm. But it kind of does, which is very sad.
Yeah, and I think like moving forward, I think how can we change that?
South Africa, the fact that we have to identify formally or officially as black, white, or colored, or Indian, or Chinese, or whatever, this needs to be taken away. It doesn't make any sense, I guess, for, you know, identification purposes. If you get lost, then I guess people need to know what skin color you are. But to apply for loans, to go to school, to do anything in this country, you need to state what skin color you are. And I feel like in this country, because we moved away from apartheid and we made, there is a big difference. The next step, I feel, should be to take this away.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and
what kind of things do you think needs to change in America?
I mean, there's a lot that can change. I feel like we tend to focus on like, you know, like it's not a bad thing in a sense to focus on race, because there's, you know, different racial injustices, but I think it's really, you know, there's like different like stereotypes that play into different race groups here. And I think people like think because, oh, they have this experience with this type of race, so that means that every race is kind of like that. And I've kind of noticed that with like, you know, the friends I've, you know, had, and you know, different conversations, is that, well, they all think like that, or they all view like this. And that's not necessarily true. And I think everyone is different and everyone has different opinions. And I think we shouldn't be judged just what like our skin color is, because we all came from different backgrounds. And yes, there's more privilege, you know, with like a certain race than other races. But I think we can all, in a sense, stand united and really accept each other for who we are.
And what steps are you, like, actively doing to educate yourself? Like, are there any tips that you might have for anyone?
I think for me is that I always like, I try to ask, you know, questions like maybe from like my friends that are from different like races, like a different background. I'm always like curious to know. And I think that's like the best, probably the best source is to really, you know, ask questions. I think really, how can we be better? I think there's a lot of books that are out there and a lot of like, you know, research that are out there, and you can have these conversations. And I think the first step is having conversations with people, because I know it can get uncomfortable, and like sending certain content to people can be uncomfortable, but I think that's like the point of change. It's like, if we don't have these conversations, then nothing's gonna change.
I agree, like a conversation like we are having now, because essentially we are from different worlds, but we are learning from each other while we are having this conversation, and there's beauty in that.
Yeah, I mean, there are some things you told me. I mean, I did like know a bit, because I did like read some stories about the apartheid, but I didn't know that there was like, you know, a division between, I think, blacks and people who are mixed race in like in South Africa. And
that's just like the classification for classification purposes. But during apartheid, both races were oppressed equally. There was no like, you are black, so you are more suppressed than I am because I have a white, partially white skin. There was no such thing.
Yeah,
but there was, we had like what we call the Segregation Act, which meant that white people essentially live in one area and black people in one area and colored people in one area, and it was policed that way that you can never leave your area. Whatever amenities that are in the white area, black people or colored people could never go and play in that park, for example, that's in the white area, that's nice and looked after. Whereas in your own area, maybe you have a very run down park with no slides or swings or anything, and you as a kid feel like you want to play on the nice swings. There was no such thing.
Yeah, I think like, you know, it kind of, that type of like racism, you know, I think like, I don't know how it is in South Africa, but I'm assuming like where like the white section is, it's more like there's more things out, like it's like quote unquote better, but then they put, you know, whoever's colored and black in like one area. And I think the system, they kind of try to do that on purpose. Just so like, you know, the people that are white in South Africa have more of an advantage. I don't know. I don't know if I'm correct on that, but that's what I'm assuming from what you're telling me.
No, you are essentially correct. Even back then during apartheid, the education system was also very unequal, and most of the resources went to the white schools, and they had a better education than the black or the colored people, which is quite sad.
Yeah, I think like they try to put whoever's like more of like the, I guess, quote unquote minority in like I guess a poor area, so like they do it on purpose, like it's they try to do that on purpose, and you don't realize until like later on you start reading all these books and research, and you kind of like seeing like, oh, like it's like really like set up like that way, like they really are trying, you know, certain like groups, like they don't want them to succeed or they want them to have more difficulties. And that's where like I think the whole concept of like white privilege comes in, is that, you know, it's not that, you know, they're white people don't have like, you know, issues in their life, that's not what I'm saying, but I think, you know, a lot of them have that privilege where, you know, they, most of them are not really economically disadvantaged. I think they can get away with like getting certain jobs or having certain opportunities. I couldn't hear you. What did you say?
That's it, totally.
Wait, did you say you agree?
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, I think they just try to set up the system that way, but I think there has to come a point where, you know, why do certain people have to live in a oppressed system? Like, we have to, I don't know, I think we have to create like equal, you know, they try to do equal opportunities, but in a sense, it's not equal opportunities, if that makes sense.
And I feel like people of color should need to stop fighting for that equal. And for some people, it feels like an idea before feet that's gonna happen or in the future, but fighting for that equality, eventually I feel like it will happen. Each generation will make a big difference.
Yeah, I think it's really, I think right now we're at a time where we're really like opening our eyes and really seeing like what has like our governments have done. And I think we're trying to change that. We're at this like age, and I don't know if you're like into astrology, I'm like totally am, but we're at the age of like Aquarius, which means that like the veil is being like uncovered and everything, you know, people are starting to realize more. And it's in a sense like whatever's happening now, it will get better. And eventually, like, all of us are, it's going to be like this utopian society where we're all equal and everything is like organic. And in a sense, like, we are going to be technologically advanced in the future, but it will create a sense of equality, like truly a sense of equality later on, what we're doing now.
I really hope so. I feel like we'll be able to reach that if everybody plays their role.
Yeah. Obviously, not everyone thinks the same, but I think the more we educate, then the more it won't pass on to the next generation. So I think like moving on, I think any self-help techniques or any self-love techniques that you can give someone during this time?
I personally see a psychologist, and that helps me work through any darkness or any bad mental days that I have. And also journaling helps me a lot. And yeah, writing has always been like my little safe haven.
Yeah. Me too. I've been like looking up different like affirmations, and I recently bought a Kindle, so mine is like I would read, and I would read like these positive books, and I would try to kind of like take notes and imply it in my own life.
What kind of, or which book would you recommend right now?
So let me, you know what, it's called like 33 visualization techniques. Let me get the like the exact name, hold on. It is called, let me see, I have to do this quick. But one of them I do recommend is energy healing techniques. And that one is just kind of gives like different like techniques to clear your mind. And I think like whatever, you know, I think we all go through different traumas, and we always have these like negative thoughts from the traumas, but I think it's finding a way how, not to in a sense like get rid of it, but how can we heal it, you know, because it's in a sense kind of like, you know, when you're sick, you know, and you want to like heal yourself, it's kind of like the same way, like you want to heal yourself energetically. So any mantras that you have currently?
I like to write a lot of different things down. But I think the one that I'll share with everybody today is love the balance of contrast that is you. Essentially, what that reminds me of is that sadness comes and goes, and happiness comes and goes. We face an infinite amount of emotions daily, and understanding and learning that that is normal is the key to peace, I feel. And the same way that they contrast in the outside world with all the corruption and the racism and everything else going on in our environment, things contrast within our internal environments, within our hearts and minds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. I think like every day, like people expect like, oh, I want to be happy, like, and I want to wake up happy. But I think like the key to happiness is not like let external factors get to you, because there's going to be things that happen, like injustices, death. You get into an argument with your partner or a friend, or you're dealing with like a breakup, and something in your family happens. So I think it's really how to cultivate that inner peace. And I think just being, you know, peaceful during a time that can be very, you know, disheartening at times. And I think it's just really trying to bounce back, and you know, that you're gonna keep moving forward. And that it's okay to process the emotions that you're having now. If you're feeling angry, then feel angry. If you're feeling sad, feel sad. If you're feeling, you know, upset, feel upset at that moment. Because I think at the end of the day, we are human. But I think it's just try not to be at that state for too long, because it could really kind of like, you know, not align with you, what your purpose is. And I think trying to try to move forward and bounce back, and finding different healings can really help.
We have to learn to ebb and flow through our emotions, like nature ebbs and flows, like the ocean, the waves come and go, the sun comes and goes, the stars come and go, the moon comes and goes. Everything has a certain time where, you know, it's just, that's just how life works. There's a certain time and place for it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think nothing is always going to be permanent. And I think it's just really understanding that it's going to be okay, and that whatever that ended, there's always going to be a new beginning.
I love beginnings. I love watching sunrises.
I'm more of a sunset. I'm more sunset by the beach.
Aw, I miss the beach.
I do too. And I think my last question is, what would you tell someone who's having a hard time coping with injustices?
One thing that my mom taught me was that we all have something different to fight for, and what's key to the fight is focusing on the generations in the future. We already spoke about this, but my mom and all the people who fought during apartheid and all the people who lost their lives, you know, they fought for a generation that wasn't born yet. And that's why we are a better nation now than we were 26 years ago.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that we are, you know, with everything going on, I think we are entering a new world. And I don't know, I just have this feeling like it's going to be for the better. I know it's really shitty right now watching what's going on, but I think there's a lot of things we can take away from this. And I think, you know, whatever destruction is happening and trauma, and with all the governments, you know, being exposed, and, you know, celebrities being exposed, I think really showing us, you know, a deeper meaning into life and what all of us really need.
I definitely feel like compassion, selflessness, and unconditional love are the batteries needed to fuel this new world as we move into a new era.
Exactly. I think that's what we need, and I think where, you know, all of this is all in a sense supposed to happen, because there's a lot of corruption and there's a lot of people getting away with certain things. And I think right now it's, you know, a time where we did know about this, and now, you know, 2020, we're like, okay, like, we're bringing this down and we're building a new world right now, and it's going to be a better world for, you know, future generations.
Yes, 2020 vision, like you said, the veil is lifted.
Yes, It is. And it's not over yet. It's only end of July. So more's to come. I think this year has probably been like the slowest, fastest year I've had.
It doesn't even make sense, but it makes sense.
Yeah, I told like one of my coworkers, I was like, this has been the slowest and fastest year. And he was like, yeah, like it's like July, but it's still July. And I'm like, yep, that's how I feel right now. So I just want to thank you for coming on. I know we were having a bit of bad connection on this call, but I just want to thank you and the view for your opinions, and it was a really good time.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I think just a quick promo of anyone where they can follow you.
Like you mentioned before, I have a photography page. That's called Erin Martin ZA. And people can follow me on Instagram as well.
Okay, and what's your Instagram handle?
Erin T. Martin.
Okay, and it'll also be on the bio for anyone who's curious about Erin. And yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming, and I hope you have a good night.
Thank you, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.